Okay, 8:45. We have almost 1 hour. As you know, we are going to the Attadanda Sutta. No, Sariputta Sutta. We are analyzing Venerable Sariputta's answers for the questions from the Buddha. So before going into the formal discussion, I would open the discussion for anyone who wish to have any presentation or interviews or suggestions or criticism.
Avasarai Bante, we have received one report to present today. Dear most venerable, sitting meditation, I notice an active and most outside-orientated mind when starting. Soon there is a stronger sense of being within myself. I started with observing in and out breath. Little effort is needed, or it is even effortless. A little more effort is needed to see the beginning, middle, end, and the gap in between. There are superficial sensations of the breath, like a subtle touch above the upper lip and prickling and pulsation below the skin, which is also sensible in the gap between breathings. After a couple of breaths, the mind wanders off for little moments, or around 1 to 2 minutes. In the course of the meditation, I kept a more open awareness, noticing breath, thoughts, body sensation, and sounds. Walking meditation. While having an open awareness, I notice body sensation, thoughts, feelings, and mind wandering. At the beginning, I sensed tension and a more outside-orientated mind. Later, calmness, enjoyment of the present experience, and more inside orientation of the mind. Daily activity. It feels like a strong movement of pendulum between the calm and mindfulness. Mindful state of the monastery and an excited outside-orientated state. Also between an insecure and very confident feeling of myself. The difficulty of a balance is about how much to restrain myself in interaction, physical activity, type and amount of food, or follow the spontaneous impulses more or less mindfully. I also notice judgments towards other outside monastery. That's the end of report, Bante.
So the the confidence is the term which is appearing towards the latter part of the report. So ultimately that is the most, that's the matter. If you have the confidence, meditation is confidence, world is full of confidence, and you have the trust. If you do not have confidence, that is we call no faith. If the confidence means faith, but this confidence is not the unfounded faith. This is something well-founded with your, orientated with your own meditation. So therefore, this confidence is the what ultimately decides everything. So this is called Okappana Saddha, just not the Pasada Saddha, it's not the unfounded Saddha. So therefore, all the religions are starting with the unfounded Saddha. And in Buddhism, we have something verifiability. When the verification happens, that unfounded Saddha will replace by something verifiable, that is self, here and here now I am based. So when that happens, you feel, whether you are sitting or walking or not, you are in meditation. Your whole life becomes meditation. So this is the way you make the whole world as a meditation center. All postures as meditative postures, all the objects as mindful objects. So that is what I call diversification of the mindfulness, diversification of the meditation, or multitasking. So that is what we need basically for the lay life. But lay life is full of challenges. But even for the monks, when they are living and in a monastery as performing all the duties, they should have that kind of adjustability, that kind of improvisation, impromptu changes. Otherwise, we go into moods. We go into tension and frustration. So ultimately, when you come up to the level where whatever the posture, whatever the object, whatever thing happen, the tension and frustration become playthings. You can understand how much I should be a fool to entertain tension and frustration. When you are in frustration and tension, if you can see another person in the very relaxed and the mindful way, that your tension also become a joke. So when Jnanarama used to say, after a while, that dissolution of the frustration and tension will be contagious. If you are living with very, very, very meditated people, that itself give a reflection for you. You need not to understand all the Tripitaka, need not to understand all the postures and meditation, just try to be with advanced meditators, that's all. So therefore, first you develop within yourself from the unfounded saddha becoming founded saddha, not well-founded, not steadfast. And after a while you can see other people, those who are moved, those who are with the tension and frustration, others are meddling with it, others, those who are beyond that. So you must try to have your livelihood at any cost, be with that kind of advanced people, then you are in comfort zone. Then you are in the least frictional path. So this is a very good transition time, turning point. Try to maintain this trend, this timetable, this feeding habit, this sleeping habit, this bathing habit, then this will be advancing. Good.
Sri Bhante, Mr. Vimal Disanak, can I allow him to talk? Mr. Vimal, you can talk.
Yeah. Avsarai Bhante, actually I want to share some thoughts regarding the previous single session, mind concept, the magic of the mind. I want to, share some thoughts. Actually, Bhante talked
you can,
about...
You can present it in a brief manner.
I have, a couple of slides for that. Actually, the hitting point is the vortex, the samsaric vortex, what magic of the mind explains. Similar way, Bhante talked about the Einstein theory, when something hit in the space, it generates the curvature. Einstein field theory, I extracted, it says curvature of the space-time as determined by the metric, the dimension, it is a rupa. Then other side, once you create the rupa, it is built in stress and energy momentum. What I got in Buddha's translation, chakkuncha paticca rupecha uppajjati chakku innana thinnan sangati passo. Once it hit, it generates the, form sort of, then it is a whirlpool, go into the vortex. That is what, I want to...
No, that you can do is, you can put this into a paper, 3 points. One thing is the energy wave going without heat. Once it hit only, it's curving the space and time. And once curved, it collapses into matter. And then it goes to the material world. Put that into a little paper and we can share it with. Thank you that you are in that specialization.
Yeah, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Now, I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakhita, our Irish co-practitioner, please go ahead with the point where we stopped last time.
Okay, so I will just begin again by repeating the Buddha's question to Mahasariputta, and then we'll continue with Mahasariputta's answer to his question. So the purpose again of this question was the Buddha was trying to bring out and display the kind of brilliant mind of Mahasariputta. So the Buddha asked him this question, what ways of speech should we adopt? On what resorts here should he rely? What should be the good behavior and observances of a bhikkhu who is resolute, having taken up what training, dwelling, unified, judicious, mindful? Should he blow away his own stains as a smith removes the flaws of the silver? So we answered some part of this last week. So I'm going to continue with the next phase, which is about five different verses that the Buddha or that Mahasariputta uses to answer the Buddha. So he continues, having obtained a meal and clothing in time, he should know moderation for the sake of contentment here. Guarded in these things, wandering restrained in the village. Even when provoked, he should not utter harsh speech. His eyes should be downcast. He should not have restless feet. Intent on jhana, he should be wakeful. Inwardly concentrated, based on equanimity, he should cut off regret and inclination to thought. If reproached with words, a mindful one should welcome them. He should break through a barren heart towards fellow monastics. Having uttered wholesome speech, but not to excess, he should not intend speech that people might blame. Further, there are five kinds of dust in the world, for the removal of which a mindful one should train. One should vanquish lust for forms and sounds, for tastes, odors, and tactile objects. A bhikkhu who is mindful, well liberated in mind, should remove desire for these things at the proper time, rightly investigating the Dhamma, unified. He should destroy darkness. So said the Blessed One. So, yes, here again we go with really practical points. And sometimes we have to be firm with our mind that having obtained the food and necessities, When we just say food and clothing, we also mean, lodgings, medicines, the four requisites. He should know moderation for the sake of contentment. So moderation is, we usually think moderation means simply not too much. But moderation also means not too little either. We shouldn't be excessively harsh. So maybe in this time of abundance, for people listening, they will think, I could do it less. But actually, so forest monks have a tendency to be extremely frugal, so sometimes they could do it a little more. So knowing moderation, knowing what is enough, is actually a profound insight. And we need to sometimes explore the possibilities of could I do it a little less and then find out if that works and suits my life? But sometimes also, what if I took a little bit more? So knowing moderation, we have to kind of come to that point, that equilibrium, that dynamic fulcrum where moderation sits. And it changes with the seasons. It changes with our age. So we shouldn't just be like a hammer hitting a nail every time saying that this is the right amount. It's a very dynamic process to know this moderation. But having known that there is moderation or that we have enough, we have to make a contentment and just say to mind, this is enough. It's enough. Or this will be enough. You know, this will be enough too. So we have to guard the mind in regards to these things about requisites and support and so forth when we have enough. And wander restrained through the villages. So we're not trying to prompt and, start to gather stuff excessively. So even when provoked, he should not utter harsh speech. So this can be like people who tend towards that they like calm, peace, and solitude. They can be disturbed even by speech and provoked because they're used to not being disturbed. They like their little glass house, and so they need to. One needs to be careful when one goes about, and not be easily provoked, not be easily startled, and not utter harsh speech. So, this is really a skill. His eyes should be downcast, he should not have restless feet, and intent on jhana, he should be wakeful, inwardly concentrated, based on equanimity, he should cut off regret and inclination to thought. So these are like a nice, short, brief meditation teaching here, where we move through all the different phases. So even while out on Pindapat, or while out gathering alms, or while out doing our duties of sweeping or whatever it is, and tidying up, going shopping, whatever we are, we can be actually cultivating the causes and conditions for the meditation. So we don't really begin meditation on the cushion. We arrive at the cushion. You know, it's just like an airplane doesn't land on the runway. It has to come in. It has to have a flight path down onto the runway. And the same when we go about our daily activities, before we come to the cushion, sitting on the cushion, and then after the cushion. We're constantly cultivating, marshalling all of the different factors that are going to help our ultimate goal, which is the cultivation of wisdom. So here we have to figure out how to cultivate equanimity, cultivate concentration, be wakeful, cultivate the factors of jhanas, to restrain our eyes, to not have restless feet, going here and going there, and cut off regret, thoughts about the past, and inclination to thought, which would be, again, a reference to thinking about the future, planning, and so forth. So these are the big aspects of how to practice well, how to practice and cultivate meditation. But if you are doing these things, again, to just go back to the previous one, one should know moderation for the sake of contentment here. So when we're doing all of these different factors, then no moderation with regards to these things, not too little and not too much. And then develop the contentment that this is enough. And if reproach with words, a mindful one should welcome them. He should break through a barren heart towards fellow monastics. He should utter wholesome speech, but not to excess. He should not intend speech that people might blame. So again, here this emphasis on speech is because speech is a very adjacent to the nature of the mind. How well we manage our speech is a reflection of our mind. And So speech is very important. It's maybe one of the most important of the five precepts. It's the one that's most easily broken, and it's the one that is at the same time the most important. And in the commentaries, or in Burma anyway, I heard that of all the lifetimes of the Bodhisattva, that he broke, of the five precepts, the one precept he never broke was that of speech. As a king, he put people to death. You know, maybe as a king, he invaded surrounding territories. Maybe as a king or as a great person, he had many wives or whatever. And maybe as a king, he entertained guests in banquets and with drinks. But he didn't break the speech precept as a bodhisattva. So anyway, this is a kind of a story I heard in Burma. I don't know about its validity, but it's a story I keep in mind about the importance of wholesome speech. And wholesome speech is something that we have to cultivate. It's a skill, and we have to practice it all the time, and we have to learn ways and means around speech, skillful speech, And I have to say that one of the most skillful and difficult things is to say no. It's always very easy to say yes, but saying no skillfully is a very big challenge. And not having a barren heart towards our fellow monastics is, you know, to just always have that wise discernment and try to think, oh, you know, maybe this person's a bit off today. They're not happy. They're sick. You know, maybe this person's having a health issue. So we can try to not have a barren heart, not always thinking the worst of them and appreciating the challenges of this holy life, that it's rare to be a monastic and it's rare to be in the forest. For instance, it's rare to have a person who is frugal and moderate. So it's it can be, you know, we have to see these qualities as rich and abundant when sometimes the other aspects, the physical aspects, may be poor in some ways. So these are just some thoughts on these three verses. There's two more. Maybe Mahatero could tackle
now
these.
We have come to the almost the end.
Yes, so it's we're talking about number fifth from the end, fifth, fourth, third. Yeah. And then we'll tackle the last two if there's time.
Now, this is a kind of a questionnaire the Buddha presented, as if you have a very serious disease. You are put into the intensive care unit. Now you are about to go to the normal ward. How the intensive care unit special treatments, you are going to live without, doing away with that, and how must you maintain still the recovery of your disease. And after a while, you can go home. Once you go home also, you have to maintain, you are a recovering patient, so others has to take care, you also have to take care. So if the intensive care unit treatment is to be removed, the attendants and the patient must understand how it is going. And then to the home. Well, Pandita Sahib used to say, when the Saturn V rocket is going to the moon, it is burning 88% to 90% of the fuel for the first 6 miles. And then the whole journey they are making with maybe less than 10% of the fuel. So when it is coming back, the shuttle is coming back to the atmosphere, there's a huge calibration from the frictionless, the empty space, to the very thin air. So when it is coming, if it come hit, it will burst. If you come parallel, it will bump off and it will never enter into the atmosphere. So when I go to Texas, the what is the center, the control room for the Apollo?
NASA.
So I asked that. They told it's very serious. They gave me a complete set of papers. They say the angle must be calculated to the hundredth decimal. Otherwise, it will come and burn and push off. Again, come in. So how to enter into the sexual world after you become a pure person? Very difficult. To be a pure person is difficult according to the people, those who are living in the sexual and sensuous world. But the most difficult part is once you understood how to live with the day-to-day people. It is like a shuttle, is only the shuttle is coming. Saturn V, 1, 2, 3, all burned now. Coming, and it must be 4.68 degree, it must enter into the air. And then rotating so much of circles before falling into the Atlantic Ocean. It never comes directly. So when we become monks, when we are going to the lay people, they sometimes expect we as an arahant. Some people expect you also another lay person. Why are you asking white clothes? Why you ask me to wash your legs? You also another citizen John. So we don't know what kind of people. So how to live with them? Because they are living with social norms. You know it's a joke. Social norm is utter jokes. It is not to have any friction. We are abiding by the social norms, but we know social norms are not leading to Nibbana. So you are living, and then you go to the moral restraint, to the concentration restraint. Then you can see the vast area. Then you go to the wisdom restraint, and there you disavow that all what you have claimed so far. And then again you have to come back and live with the people without any moral. From the intensive care unit to the ward, from the ward to the household life. The rocket from the no air situation and come to the very thin air. And how is you are entering? That is utterly failed in today's monk's life. They do not know how to live with the meditated mindful level and then come with the monastic atmosphere and then go to the lay people. They are always make frictions. Either expectation, lay people must treat us something like that. Or we expect they are doing unwanted pujas and kind of, I don't like it. The Buddha, the way he tackled it, 45 years he lived on the human world as a human being, walking on the path. He is not a god above the clouds. He is not like the Muslim god. You can't draw a diagram even. You can't talk about. No, he was a lay person. Buddha says, I am not a god. I am not a Brahma. I am not Gandharva. I am a human. No one understands that value. Because when the rocket going and coming, entering into the atmosphere, is not a simple task. Even the control room can't control it. Just like an aeroplane come and landing on the runway, you can see that how it must be aerodynamics, because the upper air layers are laminated. So very easy to drive. But when you come to the air, it's a lot of turbulence. Specifically in the airports. And when it comes, if it is changing, then the whole body angle cannot be controlled. And that must be so perfect, then only it will come and hit the lower wheels and then the upper wheels, and then it will run like a car. Now, imagine a car, imagine an aeroplane, and imagine a rocket, I mean, shuttles. So people think going is difficult. No, coming back and living with the normal people is the most difficult. So if you can, please read the book, Thus Spake Zarathustra. I have a copy. Nietzsche is talking about how the Zarathustra, living in the top of the mountain, in the one single tree, lot of the rains and thunderstorms, and he lives so much of years. Then he one day look at the sky and says, hi, I have enough live with you. Why can't I go to the fish market down there in the village? So he is contemplating. He says, no, that my life must be in the pure. The no human, nothing on the sky, on the sun, on the moon and the tree and the kind of thing, clouds and the lightning. Then ultimately made up his mind. It's very, very compromising. And then when he come back, the Zarathustra devotees are going up looking at to worship Zarathustra. You know Zarathustra? Zoroastrianism? There's one person in the Persia, before the Buddha, he was explained so much of these kind of thing. There's one theory, that particular person says, it is true or not, I don't know. That theory came to the upper, the northern part of India, and then that only conditioned the Buddha to understand there is another sphere. The Zarathustra gave the basic clue, and that everything killed and burnt in the library in Iraq. But Zarathustra is revitalized by Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche, and he is writing Thus Speaks Zarathustra. When the devotees come, they do not know who is Zarathustra. That particular person is coming down and the devotees come upward. Yes, do you know where to find Zarathustra? Ask him for Zarathustra. He says, yes, you have to go up there. He is living in a very solitude place. And then, where are you going? I am going to the fish market. There is a magic show. Who are you? I am Saratosa. He says, what a kind of confusion. He says, if you wish to see Saratosa, go up. He knows. But the other people come with so much of devotion. What a thing that I can see Saratosa. When Saratosa is coming and asking, at last he says, I am Saratosa. So he has to convince, you go there, that atmosphere there. So when you go there, there's a huge, magic show. And cramping happened, one person died. And to the night, everyone goes, that carcass is there. Saratustra take it into the shoulder and he is going to take a cremation. And he is explaining what is the rationale behind the Saratustra's mind. Now I invited and it has been translated into Sinhala. Thus speaks Saratustra from the completely enlightened pure air, pure water, atmosphere, he decides to come back. Exactly the thing, after the 7 days, 7 weeks of the enlightenment, Buddha decides to go to the five disciples. All the five disciples reject him. Have you heard about that story? Who are you? Why you are coming and asking that special treatment? We are co-practitioners. Water is there. If you wish, wash your hand, mind your own business. Who Pandita said, see, three times Buddha told, hey guy, I have something to tell. Why you are listening to you? You and me are the same. Why? Three times the factory fresh Buddha failed. The fourth strategy he told, have I ever told you that I have something to tell you? Then only they looked at each other because he's such a humble guy. Earlier they thought he is from the king's family. He is come here to get the assistance and the caretaking. But let the Buddha ask, I have not told you, please sit and told. Because I have never seen something. I have never experienced it. Why today I am telling you? Because I have seen something. Then only they listen. Oh, Pandita said to give, it is goose pimples coming. How difficult the truth is to transfer to the people in the day-to-day problems. The person who knows the Saratustra's the dwelling up there, but he says, I am living with the clouds and the sun and the moon and the thunderstone. What? I must go to the fish market. The way he is rationalizing, exactly the same thing happened to the Buddha. After the enlightenment, he decided not to tell anything because people are busy. They don't have time. They have problems. And Buddha is not giving any answer for them. Whatever the Buddha is going to say, sit, calm and look at the breath. The people say, what are you talking nonsense? My wife is in the parturition pain. I need visa to go to other country. I wish to learn English. So these are the problems. Ultimately, Mahabrahma came and worshipped the Buddha. Please, sir, when you are striving, you told, I will cross over and cross others. I will get enlightened and I will help others enlightening. So now, after the enlightenment, you become dumbbound. Have you heard about the Paccheka Buddha? The dumb Buddha? There are three types of Buddha. Samma Sambuddha, Paccheka Buddha, Savaka Buddha. Have you heard about? Paccheka Buddha, they can't speak. They are self-enlightened. They are like making a lamp and cover up with another shadow. You can't see the light. He is fully lightning, but it's completely covered. He can't talk. Because he gets stumbled, still spellbound. All the people had some kind of experience, they better not to talk. But people utterly misunderstand. Even if they come and worship, please Bhante, please share. Then Buddha says, please listen. I am going to talk. Listen carefully. Otherwise you are accumulating demerits. because you are ill-treating Dhamma. So early 17 odd number of Sikya, the last part, not to keep Dhamma to the people walking, wearing hats, wearing shoes, wearing umbrellas, wearing weapons. That is not mistake. You are a mistake. Don't tell them. They must be prepared. That prepared time is what we call, we have the Buddha's dispensation, Buddha's asana. When you go about it, see the show, people are completely in the sex and the sensuous world. So when we go on Dhamma Duta, Upandita Sahaja says, I never say I am a Buddha Duta. I say I am a Dhamma Duta. I am just talking about the principles. Don't worship Buddha. I am not asking you to worship Buddha because your religion is worshipping is wrong. So when he is talking about, we feel the importance of experience. And there is a pattern for them to eat, to walk, to talk. Everything is Dhamma. That's a silent sermon. In the present day, the whole world in a mess. There's a one person is writing, I am addressing to the conscious army. Those who are mindful, they stop physical work. They stop verbal work. They stop mind and mindful, and they are the only people cooling down the earth. They are the only people contributing to the pollution, internal and external. Very little. Not that bloody fools, so-called government leaders. They are utterly lost. They have no chance. They have no time. So therefore, those who are practicing in the conscious army, they practice more and more. Not tell anything. It's a silent sermon. So this is the way the Buddha is provoking Venerable Sariputta. If someone enlightened, what is the way of walking, talking, doing something, working with the people, giving the pindapath? So Venerable Sariputta is giving. I am leaving the intensive care unit. When I go to the ward, still I try to maintain my recovery rate. Even from the hospital, if I go home, I have to behave like a person healing, recovering. Otherwise, the recovery will be less. So these areas, the Venerable Pandita Sahaja never mentioned about the Tashpek Saratusra. Osho mentioned about. Please understand, once you enlightened, when you understood, you are in a hell of a trouble. You can't understand why I am living with these people. Why I am living with this much of work. Why I should have so much of intentions. Why I should have so much of planning. The world is chaos. But you must know how to live in the world without giving troubles to the commoners. They are utterly poor people, innocent. They are full of burden. This is never taught in any university. No courses, no any diplomas. Because this is happening here, now I am basis. You can't communicate. Communication is at least two people must be there. So this is a very rare communication. Venerable Sariputta says, go and sit the place where if your two knees are not wet, that's enough. Don't expect ceiling and the roof and the, all the kind of thing. Just sit and eat. Stop eating five morsels before. Don't have one for the shot, one for the road. No. And he is coming from such a prestigious family. And he's teaching others. And the Buddha says, listening to the thousand words of the utter fools, listen one verse of the Venerable Sariputta. So practical. Asaji, Venerable Asaji is telling, Ye Dhamma Hetu Pabha Te Sang Hetu Ntatagato Aha. He got enlightened. My teacher, he says, everything happening due to the cause, he talk about the effect as well as the cause. Enlightened. And he, after enlightenment, he teach how to stop the causes. That is my teacher's teaching. When he reciting all the four verses, Moggallana got enlightened. They are so so, how do you call, contented people, just little gist. Recently, Malcolm Gladwell wrote about the book, Thought Without a Thinker. No, Power of Thinking Without Thinking. You have this. This is your capacity. It is that thinking happen as a spontaneous. It's called the power of thinking without thinking, the gist, the glimpse. The book's name is Glimpse. All the big people understood things not in the linear system. It's a coincidence. Then he is in utter trouble how to communicate with other people. Then only he need formulas, he need symbols, he need talks, hours talking. But the enlightenment is called Satori in the Japanese, quick enlightenment. They are happening in series. So this is a kind of quick enlightenment put into a linear system. The matrix is put into linear system. We Buddhists really appreciate it. But other people never open even this book. Even the Buddhists never open this book. They consider this language is very archaic. We can't understand. We are happy to learn about the Buddha's past life. We are happy to listen to the before the enlightenment, the prince life. And they have Torana, Vesak Torana pandals, you see, big pandals. And Bhakti Gita, the Munadjana Bhakti Vitolta. On Vesak day, they are chanting of the Buddha's qualities and all nonsense. Never about the enlightenment. Carol, not the Carol. And Carol is the Catholic method. So this is the world we are born. Our parents are such. They never expected that kind of beyond the air, beyond the gravity, beyond the capacity of the earth. They never think about. Because they wanted to grab hold the earth. More lands, more power, more money. But these Zarathustra and others, that's what they are going to talk here also. When you go there, they have to come back again to the... And the best book, I have two copies. Jonathan Livingston Seagull. That seagull is that leader's son. It's a seagull, you know seagull? The bird, and it's very intelligent, therefore Jonathan. And Livingston is given name. And he never think about getting the father's the leadership. Instead, he want to fly 6 inches before water, above water. How friction is. And then he want to see 12 inches above. And then he is trying. And he is flying up and flying down. And he go up to 274 miles per hour. And then feathers are shattering off. So one day he got enlightened. And by that time he is outcasted. He know definitely the other seagull will peck him. And anyway he goes to this. Then father says, that bloody fellow is coming. Don't follow anyone. Because he is not behind fish. He is just flying. Written by a pilot. Then there's one seagull with a broken leg. He become Jonathan Livingston's disciple. Then he take him to the air and teach him horizontal flying, the vertical flight, up and down, and how much the seagull can test it. The way he decide to come back to his breakfast fork, is utterly goose pimple type language written by John Buck. One of my teachers, Godwin's best friend, Richard Buck. Parakram Fanand was teaching me. And he says, beyond this, I can't read it because I get involved because the enlightened people find so difficult to come to the breakfast fork. What the hell they are there? You must go to the forest and live your life. Don't come with us. We have enough problems. We have divorce problems, we have job problems and all the kind of thing. But how he decides to come back, it's in the 50 number of pages, so much of photos. And after that he decides, never mind, my father will kick me out. The day people will outcast me. But anyway, it is my duty. I am a seagull. I have got something. I have to tell my fellows, eating is not the main job. You have special way of diving, flying. So that is the way. So when before becoming a monk, Godwin and the Parakrama, they took special places and took me there. So they anyway recommended to become a monk because they thought it's a mad. But if you are practicing, very easy to see the other end. But how to come back and live with this breakfast fork? This is what... It is not a short answer. It's a very long. I cited that Saturn V rocket. I cited the Zarathustra. I cited Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And how Buddha found difficult to share it with the Panchavagya Bhikkhu. And that's a very important thing. And there are a lot of cases. People come and ask, who are you? Why you are telling others? Mind your own business. So the way the Buddha took the wave and cutting through, it is not the Dhamma. It's a kind of a silent sermon. It's a way of art. It's a body language. So Venerable Sariputta is the second best. So I have taken a lot of time. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Swami Nansa. It's beautiful. Your descriptions, and I have noticed that, well, the first disciples of the Buddha were already nearly arahants, and then they became arahants, but when they were talking about these restraints, how we should downcast our eyes and we should be contented, we should wander restrained in the village, these sort of restraints and the sakyas that we follow seem to me to be like how an arahant would behave and how an arahant spends his time looking inward and meditating. So, I guess these suttas were supposed to be during the arahant's time, when before the Vinaya rules came down. But still, it sounds like he's telling people how they should practice in order to be practicing towards enlightenment. So, but I just had that kind of thing that I've noticed about our Vinaya rules, that they seem to be trying to make us live as an arahant would live when we're not really arahants. So just had that observation.
South Africa.
No, Swahili. Kiss Swahili.
What country are you from?
I'm from Kenya.
Kenya?
Yes.
That's all South African. No?
No.
Kenya is?
East Africa.
East Africa.
Correct.
So you're basically living in that with the tribal groups, or you are living in another civilized country?
Well, there's 42 different ethnic communities in Kenya, and we all live together. I live in the capital city, Nairobi.
Nairobi.
Right.
There are two monks.
Yes.
One Sri Lankan monk, almost dark like you. And
that's
one
right.
Nairobian monk, that's also the same. I met him in Melbourne, and now his mother and everyone ordained, and they are running, I think it is Kenya. Uganda.
That's Uganda.
Uganda.
Yeah.
How
there
close?
There are no Kenyan monks.
How close, Uganda and Kenya?
We're neighboring countries. It's about an hour from Nairobi to Kampala, the capital of Uganda.
So crossing the border is how dangerous or how easy?
It's quite easy. When I went there, I went by bus to Uganda.
He has been, his whole clan killed, 400 people, and... there were some young babies crying. People come and kill with the bayonet. and he behaved like a dead person, and he escaped. He put into the jail and given all the torturing, then decided to become a monk. It's kind of a coincidence. And later, when he was living like a monk, the Ugandan found it's a mistake according to their constitution, again put into 40 days jail. And we had a particular person to torture him. And he decided to not to have any kind of agony or antagonism. And ultimately, that person also converted like and released him little earlier than. And he then go to all the war crime places, worship, and became a monk. And his mother also, she can't understand what is happening. She also became. Now there is a temple. So he used to come to our 2018 conference and give a talk. Well, his talk is very precise. And dukkha is utterly this thing. But he had no chance because he went to Germany and got difficult to come back to Sri Lanka. And recently I found a complete video, whole village going to Pabbaja, not the Pabbaja, having brown clothes and living. So what about this talk today? What is your opinion?
Well, I found that most of it was addressed towards the monks. But I feel very akin to that because this is a life that I aspire to. A few takeaways I got was from the answers that the Buddha gave to Sariputta about, you know, living the restrained life with eyes cast down, as it has been mentioned, trying to cut off regret and the inclination to thought. All these are aspects of the practice that I am trying to take on myself. So I have quite a lot of introspection to do with regard to this talk today.
May I ask a question?
Of course, Pante.
So when you go back to Nairobi and that white guy go to America, mm-hmm. which one find more difficult to go back home, you or American?
I think probably me. Yes.
America, we say that American is very difficult to go back and teach in America. What do you say? So I'm asking that with that of this kind of a monastic experience and kind of meditation and kind of thing, when you go back home, not to as a meditation teacher, you go home and live with your other fellow beings. Which one, who will find it is difficult comparatively? White or blue, black or white?
Easier for him, I think.
Ah, that is.
Yes, probably. Although in my country, there's a lot of religious conditioning, other religions. So this kind of life is very strange to many people. So in that aspect, it might be a bit difficult.
So my batchmates, 100 batchmates, 110 already died now. And they have get together because they are very friendly. They are very brotherly. So always asking me to come. Then I told, I never go. Well, no common topics to talk about. They are coming with family members and they are going for the circuit bungalow, have a nice day, maybe some drinking and kind of. Then I told, I find more difficult than you two to share with, because I was a very party-going type, trip-positive life. I was organizing all the time trips and parties and all the kind of thing. Now when I go there, when he go to Ireland, when Venerable Dhammika go to Melbourne, what a difficult life. Because they don't like white monks. If you go to Ireland, they don't care. Right? Because you are a barbaric fellow, they are barbaric. No problem. For me also, no problem. But a white monk, if he see, well, how that our fellows are going mad. When Dhammika was going, when the Dhammika was going, no one was at the street. So he was going to the petrol shed. And there was the vehicle is coming, collecting dustbins. In the crossroad, he stops. The tractor came with the tail full of dirt and stopped. put into his head. A white guy, white driver. So once he was went to Melbourne and came back, then he told, now you, when I am going with him, I am walking about 4 miles, all the people, hello, where are you going? What this time? Where you are going this way? Then he says, ask me, what are you talking about them? Then I said, they are my villagers. They ask him, why I am going this way? If you are going to do this in our country, you will be in hell. You can't say, how are you, hi, nothing. Dogs are dogs, they are kissing each other, but no human. He said, this is what happened. They can't tolerate I, being a white guy, became a monk. They hate it. So the people, that is the difficulty, not the giving up of your parents and the properties and kind of the, your likings and dislikings, your belief system. So when we come together from the different countries, of course we have some discrimination, but we can understand, we can mutually understand emotional intelligence. But when you go out, tonight we both going to go abroad. Completely different world from the airport onward. A different world. We are the mistake. It is our mistake. We are the people going. They are not coming to us. So we must go with full of white flags. Not to make any friction, just be. If they say sit, please sit. If they ask to stand up, please stand up. That's it. Because we are people going. We can't behave like monks. Even in Sri Lankan airport. No. That's a kind of Zarathustra coming from the mountain, go to the fish market. What was the Jesus story you were remembering?
No, they come up and say to me, have you heard about Jesus? As a monk, that I don't know about Jesus.
I had a lot of questions myself with the airport security, immigration, all questions. Where are you from? Where are you going? Do you
and
have?
You also in a wrong mistake because you told these stories are for monks. No, this is for human. Yeah, at the beginning when I was reading text as a layperson, always I thought Buddha is addressing monks. It is not where we lay people. So I had the inferiority. I told Venerable the Dhammavasa, Bante, this is very nice, but I am not up to that mark because I am a layperson. Again I told. Then he goes, no, don't think so. Because laity, everyone, Buddha is addressing the supreme group, but it is addressing the whole group. So then I asked Udhammika, I asked Upandita Sayadu. Upandita Sayadu says, anyone who has seen the flaws in samsara, you know samsara, and try to get rid of their monks. Anyone who know the flaws in samsara and try to get rid of, that's the definition of monk. Not the bald-headed and the brown color robes and kind of thing. So that gave me a huge release. But by that time, I was already a monk. But earlier I had the inferiority, these books are, it's a sacred books, it is not for us. We have to just listen to the monks' talks. But still, when I am doing a job, I used to borrow these books and read it. I have no any idea about Pali language. And when I am reading, I found there is a kind of an address to me, but I put myself inferior because I am not a monk. So vipassana make everything equal. Enlighten or not enlighten or turning point or lay or laity, ordain or laity, no problem. So discussion we are doing is just to get the idea, 2600 years old message. How lucky we are just to have a glimpse. It is talking about the culture, it is talking about the language, it is talking about the enlightenment, it is talking about the great disciples. India.
Sri Vande, before you told about three types of Buddhas. One is Samma Sambuddha, one is
Pachyeka Buddha,
and one is Savaka Buddha.
Savaka Buddha.
What is the special character of Savaka Buddha, Swante?
Savaka Buddha is always behind someone. He is from the Samma Sambuddha disciple. He is not self-enlightened, but not like a Pachyeka Buddha, he can teach others. But all the Savaka Buddhas have no equal teaching capacity. The best is Sariputta. I mean teaching, communication. Venerable Kondanya, the first to get enlightened, but he never taught anything. And the one monk, he lived 160 years. I can't remember. He is the most healthy monk. He has enlightened only one person through the whole life. But Venerable Sariputta, wherever he goes, he is so efficient. So therefore, Sravaka Bodhi, always a disciple, but they have the different capacities to communicate with others. So the first synod happened, all the 500 got together and they wanted to make it sustainable and put into a frame. And there were a lot of other people objecting it. The Buddha's teaching cannot be put into a frame. They ultimately became a Mahayana. They had their own synods. They have their own writings. These type things are not available in their books. Because their understanding is cultural understanding, social understanding, enlightenment understanding, different. But today in the Buddhist population, more than 95% are Mahayana. But they are addressing to the lay life. Theravada says, yes, we can live, that is what we are teaching. But mind your own business. They say, no, till the blade of grass enlighten, I will never think about enlightening. It is uncompassionate. So these are the things. This is among the Sravaka Buddha. So the in Sri Lanka, everyone wants to become Samma Sambuddha. In Burma, they say, no, in this very life. So one person, Stephen Smith, came with his daughter and gave it to Sayadaw and asked me, Bhante, I wish to go to Sri Lanka because I heard there are a lot of people aspiring to become Samma Sambuddha. Then I told, bring a big bags, I will give bag full of people. Everyone is aspired to become a Samma Sambuddha. No one think about in this very life. Why you are looking down that? I told, enough means enough. Only poor Pandita Sayadaw has written one book in this life itself. And this center, constitution, first sentence is in this, Pandita Sayadaw's book is in this very life. Our constitution is in this life itself. Then I found, what a coincidence. I was not aware. Even after the Burma also, I assumed this duty of the competent authority. Then I read the constitution. Recently, third person in the American embassy came to here and asked. He was participating and then asked, Bhante, I heard you are the only person in Sri Lanka talking about in this very life. Why other monks are not talking about that? Then I told, don't ask me. Are you meditating? No. Then what is the use? It's just the sake of discussion, sake of dialogue. So this is the world. There's some Savaka Bodhi. Today, Sri Lankan monks, if you take a social survey, 99% wish to become
Samma Sambuddha.
Samma Sambuddha.
One day, I heard, some of the places they give tag of Bodhisattva. In India, you heard about Ambedkar.
Yeah, Ambedkar.
They give tag of Bodhisattva.
Yeah, that is, Savaka Bodhi need Bodhisattva life. I mean, fulfilling this thing, parami. Pacheka Buddha also need, Samma Sambuddha also need. So therefore, whatever we are doing, is doing Vijja Charana. Vijja means understanding, Charana means our behavioral pattern. So we have. So therefore, many people doing good things not to become enlightened in this very life. So we call Bodhisattva. We are also the same. But we have aspiration, at least. Be mindful and mind your own business, in my language.
In this same time, the three Buddhas can burn, Bhante?
Can?
Burn in the same time, like Sammak Sambuddha and Pachyek
Buddha. Yeah, Bodhisattva. As Bodhisattvas can happen, but the Samma Sambuddha time, Pachyek Buddha never.
Never.
Pachyek Buddha, everyone has to demise. And the Buddha and Savaka Bodhi can happen. Same time.
here any example name of Savaka Buddhas in this dispensation, Mante?
You. Don't find anything out. Try to find within. Otherwise, you are doing social survey and you are doing sociology.
Our Buddha's time, Bhante, Sariputta or some other.
We are all enlightened beings. You may not be happy to listen, happy to accept, but I am telling we are yet to understand and verify that we are enlightened. We have the potential and the possibility. Okay? Thank you.